Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experience within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. Today, we have the pleasure of chatting with Toussaint Bailey. Toussaint is the founder and CEO of Uplifting Capital, and I'm sure we'll learn more about that here today. Prior to that, he was CEO of Enzo Wealth Management, as well as he had a career practicing law. So welcome and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's good to be among friends here.
Absolutely. All right. So let's jump right in here. Give our audience a little background on who you are. So where you grew up, where you went to school, and then just high level of your career. And then we'll dive in deeper from there.
Who I am really starts with my super parents, right? So both of my parents kind of had similar journeys in parallel, migrated from the South and kind of the great migration of many African-Americans. So they both were in Louisiana around the same time, both migrated to South LA, my mom to Watts, my dad to South Central LA, right around the same time. And we're first generation college students. My mom kind of got in on an Upward Bound program and my dad was a year behind her and they both met at UCLA. So I have Bruin roots. I actually went to law school at UCLA. And so we are very kind of UCLA family. And so they met there and both went into really different kinds of service. And so my dad has been a teacher all my life, first and most of my life teaching people with mental health challenges. So worked at a state hospital back when they had those.
Wow.
In the 80s. And then, yeah, taught severely emotionally disturbed students for much of my life. And then he went back to his junior high school in Watts to teach and still teaches in Watts. My mom has been a public servant all my life and none of them like any kind of airs about it. This is just kind of who they were. And this is what I grew up around. But my mom did AIDS outreach for a big part of my life. And then she went and did drug outreach, like teaching DARE programs. So she came into my elementary schools and taught DARE in my elementary schools. And then she started to help women who were in the drug courts recover and get their kids back. And then for most of my adult life, she ran a homeless support program called Project Home Again in San Bernardino, California, and did that up until her passing a few years ago. And so lived with either my mom or my dad for most of my life in Southern California. So kind of going back and forth between the two, raised all kind of public schools all around California. Actually went to a bunch of different schools just because I was moving back and forth between my mom and my dad. Went to 11 different kind of public schools from kindergarten to high school. All the while just had great parents who kind of kept me anchored and kept me at least focused enough to make my way into college, which was never a question for me because I'd seen my parents do it. Just the power of seeing somebody in front of you be educated. It was just never a question for me. And so I was fortunate enough to go to St. Mary's College in the Bay Area, Northern California, where I met my wife, and then went back down to Southern California, went home to law school at UCLA Law School, and then practiced law for a number of years, working primarily for cities and government agencies, doing litigation for them, and did that until really I wasn't finding fulfillment there anymore. I just kind of, I was mostly managing lawyers by the time I left there and wanted to, I always said it, you know, I told some of my partners, I just want to grow something. I want to do something. And so ended up stumbling into growing and running a wealth management firm called Enzo Wealth after that.
That's a big change going from being in law to any insights in that transition for us?
Tell me about it. So I was always a numbers person. So I was a finance major in undergrad and really was thinking about going to law school to kind of round myself out and just ended up loving what I was doing. So I love litigation. My good friend, now brother-in-law, was leaving one of the larger brokerages and going to start his own firm. And he had like some questions about how to do that. We were ideating around what that might look like. This is back in 2014. And so we had those conversations. And then in 2016, he had some folks who he had interested in joining him. And I, by that time, was a young partner at my law firm with all sorts of ideas about how you can bring people together and how you can incentivize people. And nobody at my law firm wanted to hear that. They were like, listen, kid, like all of that sounds great. We like what we're doing. And so, but I found a great audience in my brother-in-law, Jim Dakota, and some of the guys that he was talking to. So I ended up writing what we now call the manifesto at Enzo, which was this whole business model design around how to bring people together, how to share, how to have a fulfillment-driven wealth management experience where you're talking about more than money. That resonated with those folks who were coming to join, and it resonated with clients. And so we went from zero to close to a couple billion now from 2017 to 2022. And I'm still connected there as a board member and like touching kind of strategy at the firm. Great group of folks. And I think I believe in what they're doing from a wealth management standpoint.
Maybe you and I have had this discussion before, but I actually grew up in Oregon. I lived in Eugene, so I'm a huge, when I was little, I'm a huge Oregon Duck fan. And there was a game a couple of weeks ago. Do you follow UCLA football?
I when they're playing well, I do.
Okay. Well, they're playing well now.
They're playing very well.
Yeah. So, you didn't steal Chip Kelly from us, but you got Chip Kelly. So it was a fun game to watch. Mainly because we won, but it still was fun to watch a couple weeks ago.
So, yeah, I think Chip Kelly should have been one of those institutions at Oregon and just stayed there.
Oh, he should have stayed.
It was such a good fit.
Yeah. And he, we don't need to digress, but yeah, right. his path is, there's probably some lessons in a lot of that is people are always jumping around, especially in college athletics, and jumping around. It's like, just find your niche and go with it. Plenty of examples where people jump around and it doesn't work. So speaking of jumping around, not that you're jumping around, but I know you made a big switch from being the CEO of Enzo to starting Uplifting Capital, which is a massive transition. I mean, you're in the same vein that you're doing before, but
no, you're
starting
right.
From scratch is in the impact place. So tell us, how did you, why did you make that transition? And then give a little bit about what Uplifting Capital does.
Yeah, so Enzo was truly about fulfillment. Like, so the mission of the firm was translating wealth into fulfillment for clients. As a leader of the firm, I talked about needing to translate what wealth management was into fulfillment for the people who were working inside of the firm. So that's what it was truly about. And my philosophy on fulfillment became the firm's philosophy, this waterfall that starts with loving and trusting relationships. And then you get to self-actualization. And then from there, we wanted to do co-creation and collective impact. And the theory is if you do all of those things right, then personal gain will just happen. Mm-hmm. And so talking about that and helping clients with that is one thing, but I got to a point where my fulfillment, I made my way down that. So loving and trusting relationships, I had that at Enzo. Kind of self-actualization and getting to lead something and grow myself as a leader, I had that. But this collective impact just was the stage that I was at in 2020 with all the upheaval going on in the world. I was deeply affected by the killing of George Floyd. And I started to lead a series of conversations around having better talks across differences and better communication across differences, first in wealth management, first inside of Enzo. And then I started to publish some of those in something called the Just Listen Project. And connecting with that impact, I knew there was no way I could go back to doing that on the side, do that on the side, mm-hmm. and be this kind of wealth management leader over here. Even at a firm that was built around fulfillment, I needed to bring those two things together. I became deeply interested in the intersection of things like venture capital and private equity and real renewable energy infrastructure, all these different things where you could do well while doing good. I know you are no stranger to that.
Yep.
So I did not grow up in a family with a bunch of wealth around it, right? You can imagine my mom doing social work, my dad teaching public school. Like wealth just wasn't a huge part of our conversations. And it wasn't until I got to Enzo that I really realized the power of capital to help people live differently, to help other people. And so I was sitting next to these advisors and these clients at a firm that collectively had over $1 billion. Like people like talk, we talked in billions.
Yep.
And so there's all of this ability to unlock all of these things. And I knew that there was all these issues over here that I wanted to affect. And when I learned that there could like those the goals of helping the capital owners do well and helping these folks who could put that capital to work, make impact and also make returns through that capital. When I found out that those two things weren't mutually exclusive, I became obsessed with marrying those things, not only from kind of introducing capital allocators to these investments, but building a wealth management experience around these allocations, right, based on what I knew of advisor pain points. So what can I take from all these years that I've spent making advisors and clients happy and, mm-hmm, and use that to open up the floodgates of capital to these really, really cool and interesting investments that happen to really make an impact that's good for people, planet, and economy. And so that is the reason for the shift. And we kind of met the right teammates and put it together and got some believers who put some capital behind us, and off we went.
So it's interesting. I can relate to, in a different vein, but I can relate to where you were at. It was after a back surgery for me that kind of brought me to my knees, metaphorically and literally, for the first time. When my wife and I were making some investments, this happened to be in the affordable housing space, I had two lenses. One was, you know, the investment side. And for the first time, I was being challenged to think about what happens to that community, those affordable housing assets and people and community, when you infuse heart into it. Mm-hmm. And once you saw, and I'm going to define it a different way, once you see the power of capital, apart from philanthropic measures, it's hard to go back. And so I sat there as the president of a large organization, faking it for about 9 months until I could figure out, you know, how to actually go do this. So I understand exactly where you're at. So then, and you may have already described this, but how would you describe yourself in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
Ooh, that's such a good, broad, and deep question. I'm aligned and really just, I've gotten to a place where I feel very, very, very fortunate to be able to focus on uplifting on a daily basis. And so I think I feel like a lot of people do well and then turn to focusing on doing good, mm-hmm, right? So they do well for themselves, yep, and they accumulate. And then they turn to philanthropy toward the end of their life and start thinking about giving back because they realize it's such a deep and meaningful source of fulfillment, yep, to uplift others. I think and what you're doing and I and what I'm doing are in the very fortunate position to get to do both at the same time. And for me, my life's work now is about helping other people unlock that goodness real time in the midst of their life. So not wait to finish accumulating it and then start distributing because they've made it kind of in this self-contained kind of vein of success, but to realize that you can flow all those things at the same time. And so that's what I'm doing now. I'm using all the relationships and all the experience that I had built through Enzo and prior, and using that to uplift people in one sense, but it's also self-sustaining. So my life is an example of what I'm hoping to give to other people. Like we're doing well as a firm, as a fund manager, and as a platform, helping people get invested and doing good. Like I'm seeing the impact that we're having, and it's really, really rewarding.
So I'm going to make an assumption. You can correct me if I'm wrong. The assumption that I have of you is that you have not gotten to a point financially where you can check out and do whatever you want and start to give the philanthropy. Am I right on that? I don't want to.
That is a solid assumption.
Okay. Well, but here's why I bring it up. Because what you are doing is you are risking. But what you're doing is you're actually walking the walk. I mean, you haven't. You're not sitting with $20 million and you're going to do this. You're saying, no, I want to take the risk now. I want to engage in this now. And I just commend you as an example of how one should, I mean, not maybe should, but how one can do it versus just simply waiting. I'll get into discussions with people about impact investing and other things. And they may say they're a naysayer. And there's a side of me where I want to tell them, until you actually risk some capital or your time in this, I really don't want to hear your opinion, because it's a different, I don't say that, but it's a different deal. Like, what you're doing is you're risking your income, your family security for this. And so anyways, I just,
to double click on that. Yeah. First of all, my prior job was a really good one and much less risky, not only financially. I was working with really good people at a really good firm with a really good mission. I just had to go down this road of something that I thought was more impactful than what I was doing. And I took a lot of risk. Personally, my wife is sitting next to me over here typing away, and is probably the most underpaid, most talented person. You know, she sits right next to me in terms of how poorly she's paid for the work she does too. I think we both have taken on this risk, and we expect it to be rewarded. The same as I expect anybody who's investing with us to see financial rewards at the same time as they're seeing impact. We expect to be rewarded for the entrepreneurial risk we're taking, but to be sure, we've taken risk based on both the impact we think what we're doing is going to have, and also the kind of financial return, long-term financial return we think it's going to have.
So again, reading between the lines, and I guess you did say this, but I'll be a little more blunt. For you, jumping into this was about aligning your values, about a greater fulfillment. And so what's interesting about impact investing, and it's not an either or, but a lot of people talk about impact investing to the cause that you're investing in. Mm-hmm. There's another side you can come at this, which, and you've already alluded to this, and it's honestly, which where I'm maybe slightly more drawn to, is when you or I jump into this, whether it's our capital, whether it's our time, there is a joy and freedom that comes out of this, because it's not just about yourself. It's not just about your personal gain. Now, obviously you hope that will be there, but you can see how it's impacting others. I mean, you change your whole career because of that.
Yeah. So that's the why I like the word uplifting. There's ambiguity to it. So it's both a thing that you do, but it's also a feeling. So you can be uplifting other people, but you can also feel something that's uplifting. And so for us, when we talk about what impact investing promises, part of that is financial returns. So this is non-concessionary impact investing. Part of that is making an impact outside of yourself. But part of that is also this engagement, this uplifting that happens when you do make that impact and you do have that financial return. And I think like connecting people to the stories of impact beyond data, connecting people to the beautiful relationships that happen around kind of the humanity of uplifting others. That's something that we shouldn't gloss over. And that's one of the fears I have around the greenwashing conversation. It, in one sense, we need actual measurable data that's underlying the impact we have, but we can't shy away from telling these impactful stories because that's part of the gift of impact investing. It's an important part of the gift.
Yeah. And in fact, I'd be curious if your experience is similar. Sharing that message in the financial services industry, not only the numbers, but also the story and the emotions. There are many times when the audience is looking at me like, wait, did you just bring emotions and values into this? And so then they automatically think that I've turned off my investment brain. I'm like, no, I've got them both turned on at the same time.
Yeah, I haven't turned off my investment brain, and I haven't turned off my measuring brain even for the impact.
Yeah.
But you can best believe the reason why your clients are asking for impact investments isn't for the data.
Right.
And it isn't necessarily for the financial return, because they can get that elsewhere. They're looking for something. They're seeking some sort of outlet to connect with something beyond investments. And so us as advisors get sort of or asset managers get apprehensive about having that conversation, but it's one that clients are seeking. They're thirsty for that conversation.
Yeah. So this is a really broad question, and so you can answer it however you want. How would you say you're trying to change the world?
I'm trying to be a conduit and an access point or a lever for people uplifting others in a way that leaves them feeling uplifted themselves. I'm trying to introduce people to the idea of finding personal fulfillment through uplifting others, and understand that those two things go hand in hand. Before they get to the end of their lives and are ready to kind of gift everything through a will or through a trust, Like the goodness of your life is inextricably linked to doing well for other people or the planet or the economy. If people can understand that, and I'm an agent for that, and I know you are on the exact same or a very similar mission, then I've met my purpose. I've fulfilled my purpose.
So I was driving in today to work, and I don't know why this thought came into my brain, but I mean, it's what you and I do, but I was just thinking there, I'm like, I long to have people look at their investment capital differently, but more importantly, to experience it differently. Mm-hmm. And what you just described is, and again, it's weird in the financial services space to talk about your capital influencing you. I mean, it's always about, well, I you know, frankly, just get a return because I have this goal over here. But when people think about what it means to be a steward of that investment capital, which I think is a much bigger term than even fiduciary. I mean, there's joy. I mean, like, one of my passions is formerly, or men and women who are incarcerated or formerly incarcerated. I was in the prison 2 weeks ago. Now, this was not a pure investing thing, but to meet these guys in one of the roughest prisons in Colorado, I mean, to see them as human beings, yeah, some of them have done some bad things. Some of them will never leave, but to even see how they are able to change. And in this case, it's philanthropic stuff, but to know that some of my time and some of my philanthropic dollars go to that, I'm like, this is amazing. What a gift.
What a gift. We're hardwired to be moved by that. And I think the idea that there's this trade-off or there's right. this exchange is what keeps people away from doing more impactful things. And so to me, really finding ways to dispel that or finding ways to make people comfortable that you can do it all. If we can do that, and philanthropy is a lever that should be pulled when it's appropriate.
Sure.
Volunteering yep. is a lever, advocacy is a lever, all these things are levers. But if investing is your access point, like the proliferation of opportunities to invest for impact yeah. is such that people should know about those and be able to do those. And like what gets unlocked for us as human beings, we see it when we watch stories, we see yeah. it when you see the family hugging in the airport, whatever we are, like we get connect to ourselves when we see other people or help other people feel uplifted. And so the ability to do that with your portfolio, for advisors, the ability to help clients do that mm-hmm. with their portfolio, just what happens there is magic. I'm out to make more magic.
Right? Yeah. Well, and I'm assuming part of your strategy is to effectively communicate that message, whether it be through technology, whether it be through storytelling. I'm assuming that's part of your platform.
Absolutely. So it's values alignment, right? We've seen what can happen in the public equity space, some of the really effective direct indexers who are starting with the most basic or one of the more basic asset classes. We've seen what can happen when you really start to help people connect yep. values to investments, and you do that in a way that's very user-friendly and very relatable. The opportunities to do that in the private markets are so much more vast. And so to give people that same sort of alignment experience in the private markets and to give them the data that backs that, but then really drive home this kind of personalized storytelling that allows them to really experience their impact. We call it impact engagement, to really engage mm-hmm. with their impact and more deeply is a critical part of our a kind of thesis and investing experience.
You mentioned this earlier, so I'm going to have you expand on this. You mentioned the word the power of capital. When did you realize the power of capital, and maybe what does that mean to you?
So really, it's working with financial advisors. So part of that is seeing my own, I realized the power of money as the first kind of professional in my family at the level that I was at. Like a practicing lawyer, seeing six figures on my check was mm-hmm. was mind blowing to me, and I thought I was rich. And so the power of money there, just mm-hmm. to be able to comfortably rent and all of those things, the power of wealth. I saw leading a wealth management firm and seeing people's lives change, seeing people live with more freedom, seeing people actually removes. You don't find fulfillment in money, but you can certainly remove some of the barriers to a more fulfilling life. And so seeing those things happen real time, and having never been, as an like truly an outsider from a wealth perspective, having never experienced those, just let me know what capital and what wealth could do. And I thought, if it can do that over here, and I know all these advisors who I'm working with, all these clients who I'm working with care deeply about some of these issues that I care deeply about and don't really have an outlet to do those things. I just knew this capital over here had something to say about some of these issues. And I'm not a big fan of telling people what they should care about,
sure. Mm-hmm.
But starting with what people actually do care about and helping them become aware that they have another lever to pull in terms of for-profit investment to affect that change was something that I intuitively knew first. And then as I went deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole and with people who had years and years of experience investing this way, validated the availability. I couldn't turn off this thought that opening up capital, and particularly capital that's in wealth management, which is not this kind of pension and endowment,
right? Yep.
Kind of big blocks of capital,
yep.
But it's really everyday people who bring not only their capital, but a broad base of influence along with their capital. Like they bring culture change, they bring their voice, a collection of voices. I just thought that power was one that I was uniquely in a seat to kind of tap and one that I would set out to utilize.
Every example that you just gave of the power of capital was on a positive sense. Did you see capital as a CEO of Enzo be destructive?
It's not so much that I saw it be destructive, but I knew from my upbringing that it was the goodness that this capital was being used for was exclusive. Okay. So I would use the word exclusive more than destructive. All of these benefits were really, really tightly held, going back into these same groups of people and not even necessarily consciously. Because I think most of the clients and most of the advisors who we worked with wanted to see the world be a better place. And given the opportunity to do that and then benefit themselves at the same time, 10 out of 10 would have done that. But I did know that, you know, I spent most of my life in the kind of financially excluded category. I grew up in Southern California, in the Inland Empire, where mm-hmm. the smog from LA kind of just floats and stays trapped to the yep. point that there's times we couldn't go play outside, right? There.
Yep.
And so I've seen the other side, and I've seen how I've lived as the other half most of my life. I think I'm still probably the other half. And so I've seen it be exclusive. And I just am bent on wanting to see the benefits of positive capital distributed to more broadly and affect more communities.
So one of the things that I've experienced, and I think it's just because positionally of what I've been able to do in my career, but I've actually watched people with phenomenal means who outwardly you go, my gosh, they've made it, but their capital, I'm trying to say this in the right way. I want to use the word ruin, but that's a bit strong. But I've watched this goal of getting capital and then they get the capital, but there's no joy and freedom. In fact, burden.
It's a burden.
It's a burden. And then I've actually watched it destroy families. And so we won't go down this path too far, but I actually think part of that is a mindset issue that I love. What I love about philanthropy, but I also love about impact investing is it forces the discussion that it's more than just about me and more just about mine. And I think that mindset of opening and that posture of opening your hand and by saying, hey, I'm a steward of this. How do I use this for myself and for others, I think is an important ingredient so that greed and fear doesn't overtake, because I'm going down rabbit trail. I don't want to, but even the notion of the American dream, I think there's some yep. wonderful attributes to it. And I'm grateful for it. However, if you think that just because you have the white picket fence, that life's all rosy and everything's good, that's not necessarily the case either. So,
yeah, no, I think we've missed the point to some extent with that, or maybe we've aimed too low. And I think for those of us who have had the great pleasure of living kind of connected lives with values and money.
Sure.
I think, and then be put in position to advise others on what to do with their capital. We have to have the courage to have a slightly stronger opinion on what brings fulfilling outcomes. We can't we can't just have people show up with a set of goals and say, you know, though, like we're gonna assume, I'm gonna go with your assumption that every goal that you just brought me, whether that's a new boat or whether that's a white picket fence, is gonna bring you fulfillment. So let me work tirelessly to get you to those goals. I think like a courageous conversation says, you know, is there something more that you might, let's have this deeper conversation about what you really care about. Let's have this deeper conversation about what's really going to bring you the feeling that you're searching for with that by the boat. Right.
Yeah.
But what are you assuming that that's going to get you to, and having the courage to have that conversation. And then us who are in position to kind of have broader conversations with advisors of capital, giving the tools to have that conversation and giving language around that conversation is a great opportunity right now. Cause there's a generation, there's a two generations, like millennials and Gen Zers are coming up ready for they're naturally prepared to have that. They're expecting that conversation and demanding that conversation. And so us professionals, us advisors or capital allocators need to sharpen our saws about how to guide those conversations and how to help people refine values and how to help people pull the right levers to affect those values.
What does stewardship mean to you, and how does it interplay with this, with impact investing or capital?
To me, stewardship is very close to uplifting. I just think stewardship to me means leaving it better than you found it. So taking care of something and then ultimately at the end of the day, leaving it better than you found it. I think that could be stewardship of money. Mm-hmm. That could be stewardship of relationships or people. That could be stewardship of the planet. But in all of those cases, it just means holding something with care. And ultimately, when you let that thing go, you are leaving it better than you found it.
All right. So the final question, and this is the biggest, broadest opening question you can give. So I can put caveats on it if I need to, but I'll just ask it and we'll go from there. And I'll say this, you can leave your family out because I think your wife is still in the room. So, or we'll just assume that that's one of them. If you could have a dream or two come true in your lifetime, what would it be?
Oh, this is going to sound so promotional,
but
it is like really, really, really having, you know, so I want to uplift a billion people, whether that's directly or indirectly. The way that I would uplift that billion people was to really have them deeply understand the value in terms of personal fulfillment that can be found in uplifting others. So these create billion different agents of impact and have people do that. And in the process, uplift myself, see value for that. On the other side of that, I think we're building a business around the value of introducing that to the world. But to me, if I could wave a wand, that would be it. People would be walking around feeling empowered to change things for the better and knowing that the goodness of life comes from changing things for the better.
Have you had any of these discussions with your kids? Or are your kids too young? I don't remember.
Oh, no, we have these. We have these in kid language. But we have our five family values kind of written up on a board, and nothing goes above kindness, right? So kindness, gratitude, patience, cooperation, and grit. We talk kindness over and over and over again. And a big part of that kindness conversation is around how good it feels to be kind. Like, does it actually feel good to treat someone unkindly? Yeah. And when they do something kind, doesn't that feel amazing? And so they're starting to understand the goodness of for yourself, like this, the kind of enlightened self-interest that comes along with treating uplifting others or uplifting the environment around you.
Well, for transparency, I didn't tell you I was going to ask that question. So clearly those values are important to you. The fact that you could rattle those off for your family is stinking doggone impressive.
My 4-year-old twins could rattle those off.
Yeah, you just, I mean, we actually have family values and we've got a mission statement, and I can tell you our mission and whatnot, but like the values, I'm like, man. So you just totally inspired me to go back and get those things memorized.
Yeah, the secret is we have them written in the dining room. We have them
Okay.
written in the dining room so they read them. And before they could read, we had pictures drawn that represented each of the values, whether that's a heart for kindness, grit. We had a bike going up a hill. And so they understood that. And now not only can they rattle them off, they can tell you the number. I'll say, what's number one? What's number one in our family? If somebody's treating somebody the way they shouldn't treat them, they can tell you kindness, our patience. And so, yeah, no, we those are live values.
Well, it just reminds me, if you look at the family unit in America today, and maybe around the world, but I know America, it's not in a great spot. And so just hearing just that simple example of being a parent and having those values visible and communicating with your kids, holy cow, how impactful that is.
Yeah, that is our impact, right? Like that. I mean, I
Yeah.
can do all I want in my lifetime, but I think if we can get these to kids earlier and earlier, if they grow up with this in their guts, because part of what I got, the gift that my parents gave me is like it was unquestioned. I couldn't not go into some form of service, even if I tried to, no matter how much I tried to resist it, I just saw it as a kid. And I think if we get this kind of desire to impact and some of these values into our next generation, we're in such a better spot, and it's a much more impactful form of kind of positive change than trying to do it all ourselves.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time today. I appreciate your vulnerability. Obviously, you and I are on a very similar wavelength, so it does make this conversation easy. But I just want to say that I'm cheering for you. It's going to take a bunch of us out there to try to move the needle here. So if I can ever help you out, let me know. But we'll have links to people can find you and where to find you on this podcast. But I appreciate your leadership on the home, and we will continue to see you on the circuit. And I want and next time, well, maybe not next time, maybe too soon because I'll see you, but whatever, 5 years from now, if you can, I want to hear that quantified number, if there's a way to track it, of how you're doing on your 1 billion.
We're tracking it. And so let me thank you too for this platform, for the courageous jump that you were early to before everybody was talking about impact investing and sustainable investing. Your leap had a lot more risk than mine even in 2020. And so for your trailblazing and for everything that you're doing to just build the ecosystem, I am deeply appreciative, and my work
Thank you.
largely stands on your shoulders. So
You know
thanks.
what? You know, it's funny. It's what you said earlier. I mean, it is, it definitely has been a journey and a walk of faith. I wouldn't be fair if I didn't say I'm getting something out of it. I am grateful, although sometimes I want to hit my head against the wall. I mean, how many people get to wake up and do something they're passionate about to try to make a difference? And so I'm grateful that I had the experience, some of the capital to do that. And now it's just a longing to have others come along and get fired up when they make an investment into affordable housing or they do something in renewable energy, whatever it is that gets them fired up and to be able to go, man, not only am I in my career helping out and as a parent, but my capital over here is trying to make the world a better place. It's a what
So
an
good.
amazing time we live in where you actually can do that with your capital.
It is so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're getting better at measuring it and kind of connecting people to that. Yeah, no, I'm grateful.
Don't forget to subscribe to New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Till next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. Thanks, Toussaint.
Thanks, Jeff.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.